Now here is Bill Resnick to talk with Cynthia Aruzza about the women's strike and the pamphlet Feminism for the 99%, a manifesto which she wrote along with Titi Bacharia and Nancy Fraser. Here's Bill.
Cynthia Aruzza, welcome to KABU.
Thank you so much.
Cynthia Aruzza teaches at the New School for Social Research in New York City. She's also an activist. She writes. She co-authored with Titi Bacharia and Nancy Fraser the book Feminism for the 99%, a manifesto. It's new from Verso Press, goes on sale this week. Today we'll be talking about feminism for the 99% and the movements all across the world on so many issues, from wages to love to violence to dignity, towards a real democracy where everybody has real voices, to health for people and the environment, and pressing for more. These various and many eruptions and all the organizing, they could bring to life a powerful international movement that would change the nature of things. And that's desperately needed, of course. First, though, Cynthia, you observed the women's marches in New York City on January 19th this year. And you've also contributed to organizing the International Women's Strike. It's happening next Friday, March 8th. Millions of women, some men, not going to work, singing and marching in most of the big cities of Europe and Latin America, smaller cities too, and elsewhere. Though in the U.S., a few major marches in New York City and Los Angeles. And here, a march at 4 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square. So, Cynthia, tell us about the women's strike.
Yeah, so the women's strike started in 2016 with the strikes organized by Polish women against the abortion ban and by women in Argentina against the femicide and against the gender violence. And then, from these two countries, it actually expanded to the rest of the world, with the organization of the first international feminist strike or women's strike on March 8, 2017. So since then, the movement has kept growing. So for example, last year in Spain, 5 million people, men and women, went on strike and participated in mass demonstrations around the country. And also in Italy, the most radical unions called for general strikes, so hundreds of thousands of people went on strike, and the same in Argentina. And this year, again, the movement is expanding to yet new countries, for example, Chile, Brazil, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, Turkey, and so on. So I think we are in the middle of a new feminist wave. And what is interesting is the fact that this new feminist wave is using strikes as a form of struggle, also as a form of political identity. And by doing this, it is showing the labor that women perform, both unwaged and waged labor, showing also women's power that depends on this labor, that is also the reproductive labor that reproduces human beings and societies. But the feminist movement is also playing a more general role, which is that of redemocratizing the strike. So in other words, that of saying it is not true that only unions can call for strikes in around the world. Generally speaking, unions are not very prone to call for strikes. So the feminist movement is actually pressuring the organized labor movement, trying to radicalize it, trying to democratize it. And in cases like Spain or Italy, also managing to persuade big unions to call for strikes. So it is actually mobilizing and also playing a very important political role, not just in terms of feminist movement, but in general for the left and for the rebuilding of a class movement.
Right. You know, it's somehow it seems to me like it's a wildcat strike, not authorized by any sort of contract or not authorized by the head of a union. It's a contract strike that sort of comes from below, that rises up when people get fed up and when they're looking for the sort of solidarity in struggle. And also, it's not just in reproduction, it's also in production. It's in both. Women are exploited. They're at the lowest They're in very precarious and low-paid positions and vulnerable positions throughout the economy, along with, of course, many, many, many men.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, it is also what is happening is also significant because many women work in sectors where there are no unions or jobs are very precarious, so there are no labor rights. There is not the possibility of striking in a legal way. So the movement is actually providing the tools where it is really strong, the tools for these women to actually organize also in the workplace and go on strike by organizing wildcat strike or, you know, calling sick, this kind of thing. So it combines legal strikes with wildcat strikes, especially for women who do not have labor rights because of the kind of labor they perform.
It's also withholding their labor in the economy. It seems to me that, as you have written, it combines the sort of class issues, the economic class issues, with the women's issues in very productive ways. Instead of allowing a tension between identity issues and economic issues.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the movement is going well beyond what we may call liberal feminism. So if feminist politics is not based on identity or just the critique of language or culture, this, of course, is present too. But this is a movement rooted in class struggle. So it is basically overcoming the divide between identity politics and class politics. And also, in addition to the issue of gender, this movement is also mobilizing against migration policies carried on by governments around the world that are having a very serious impact on the life of migrant women and refugees. So it combines also the issue of race, not just gender and class.
This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole on KABU Radio 90.7 Portland, talking to Cynthia Arruza, who co-wrote Feminism for the 99%. She wrote it with Tithi Bhaichara and Nancy Fraser. She also co-wrote Feminism for the 99%. We're talking about today the women's strike, which is a central component in organizing. It's an eruption from below that the Feminism for the 99%, it's the mechanism, the powerful mechanism for, in fact, winning feminism for the 99%. Tell us, though, about this country. Why is in the U.S., or in Europe and Latin America in particular, there are really quite powerful movements. What's happening here?
Well, I think that there was the possibility for a feminist movement, for a mass feminist movement in the United States, because it is sufficient to think about the first two women's marches, so immediately after the inauguration and then the day after, these were really massive, massive demonstrations, and they were feminist demonstrations. And we may also think about the Me Too movement that actually played a very important role in the United States, even if it was especially on social media and so on, but actually did also have some impact on workplaces and so on. The problem is that I think there were, besides the usual difficulties about organizing the United States and the objective difficulty, we are rebuilding the left here, but clearly there is less of a stable tradition of mobilization, class struggle, and so on. But I think there are two elements that have played a negative role. One element is has to do with the fact that the Women's March adopted as an organizational model that of an NGO. And I think Kianga Yamata-Taylor explains this very well in an article in The Nation about the Women's March. And this form of organization didn't really facilitate a process of mobilization from below. At the same time, they were the point of reference for millions of people who were interested in feminism. So clearly, the choices they made in terms of forms of organization did play a role. And then the second problem, I think, has to do with the elections. So last year, the Women's March had as one of its main slogans, power to the polls. And the idea was precisely that the resistance needed to move from the streets to the ballot. So basically the idea was that one way to move forward was to elect as many women representatives as possible. Now, I think this contributed to demobilize somehow. It's the opposite of what happened in a number of countries where there was a process of, you know, activation from below. And this year, on top of this, unfortunately, the Women's March was made the target of, for me, completely unbased, ungrounded accusations of antisemitism coming from, especially from the right wing of the Democratic Party. And this, of course, put the Women's March in a situation of political difficulty, you know, because this kind of media campaign was started against them. Again, I do think the accusations are basically opportunistic, ungrounded. So this year, the women's marches were much smaller and many were cancelled because of this. Now, in this context, as International Women's Strike, we tried to organize a more class struggle feminism, and we did succeed in organizing a women's strike in 2017 that shut down three school districts and so on. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have, honestly, the resources and the visibility that were necessary to then solidify this kind of work. And in the absence of a mobilization of the women's march, we didn't manage to trigger a process of mobilization. However, I want to say something that something interesting that is happening in the United States is the fact that the women are, in any case, mobilizing, even if not as feminists. Because if we look at the strike wave, so the teacher strike, and then the strikes of nurses, and the possibility of further strikes in the sector of hospitality, this is a mostly female workforce. So, in a sense, we didn't manage to have a feminist movement in the United States, but what is happening is that in any case, women are mobilizing and are leading the struggle in the workplaces, but also for the defense of quality education, quality healthcare, and so on. So this says something about this period globally, in the sense that women are really taking a leading role in a number of struggles, from the feminist movement to ecological struggles to strikes.
This is KBOO Radio 90.7, Bill Resnick here for the Old Mo Variety Hour. I'm talking to Cinzia Arruza. We've been discussing the feminism for the 99%. It's going on sale this week. We've been talking about the women's strike, which is this sort of powerful uprisings, wildcat uprising compared to a wildcat strike where people self-organize rather than going out on strike, which is also good, but happens much less often. They seem as spontaneous eruptions from below, but they're prepared in all sorts of ways. It seems to me, Cinzia Arruza, we're living in a period where the left is not powerful enough, although some people have thought that, and then revolutions developed very quickly. But it could be a while until, let's say, some kind of combined economic environmental crisis can't be solved through capitalist means. They just can't keep growing in the same way. The international accounts and economic system could, in fact, begin freezing and collapsing in ways that they're unable to deal with. And also, growth for profits is what's leading to this enormous global heating. They're going to be trapped at some point. Now, it could come earlier than later. Right now, though, we are building. It seems to me the women's strike and the various manifestations from below that are surprising, the school teachers and the other actions in the United States, also in Spain and around the world, they take different forms. But there's a sort of realization amongst the entire group of working people that things are going wrong. And right now it's sort of self-protection. Sometimes it's things like the women's strike. People take, there are many forms. But at some point, it seems to me, we're going to see where people are going to understand they have to do it together. The people on top are corrupt and unable to deal with what's happening. You know, it'll take time, and I don't think, but we have some time, and we have to sort of be patient. You know, if one demonstration is not as big as we'd want it to be, there's no reason to feel terrible, because there's this momentum that seems to me to be building.
Yeah, no, I agree. I moved from Italy to the United States in 2010. And when I arrived here, I really thought I wanted to go back to Europe because I have always been an activist, and I didn't see where I could be active. The situation seemed desperate to me. And then Occupy happened and changed the conversation around the country. Then Black Lives Matter, then the Sanders campaign, the 5-for-15 campaign. I mean, if we look at the last 8 years, what is happening in the United States is quite remarkable in the sense that there is really a process of radicalization. There is, especially of young people, but not only. We have, until a couple of years ago, people were saying, scholars were claiming that the strike was dead because nobody was going on strike anymore in the United States. And this year we have a strike wave. So I think actually this is a very, very interesting moment, especially in the United States, but not only. Clearly, we operate in a situation that is extremely complicated because we are in the middle of a crisis that is not just economic. It is also a crisis of social reproduction. It's an ecological crisis, and it is a political crisis. And it is sufficient to look at the rise of the far right from Brazil to Italy, Poland, all Eastern Europe, and the United States. So clearly, we are operating in a situation that is very complicated and that is also dangerous. But I think what is changing is that an increasing number of people is coming to understanding that without a mobilization from below, there is no possibility of changing the situation. We cannot rely on progressive neoliberals. We cannot just rely on elected representatives. We do need to mobilize. We do need to struggle. We do need to go on strike. We do need to block the streets and so on and build movements and also build alliances among the various movements and the various struggles. And I think this is actually happening. Of course, this is going to be probably a long process because, yes, I agree that the left is not in a very good shape anywhere in the world. But this new wave of strikes and struggle, and especially on an international level, this new feminist wave, I think can really help us rebuild what we have to rebuild in order to start transforming our social relations.
Cinzia Rusa, that's a great place to end the interview, I think. One thing we didn't talk about, Cinzia, is the way in which our movements can be either reformist in a sense that they just sort of help the powers that be keep control, or they can be sort of non-reformist, that is, build consciousness of that other world, build a sense of power, build the capacity to collectively express power, and also build a sense of deservingness, that in fact that's broad working people can solve the problem collaboratively, and in fact the elites cannot.
Yeah, I mean, there is no contradiction between the idea, a revolutionary project of transformation of the society and also, getting rid of capitalism and reforms. So there is no contradiction about, fighting for universal health care or for minimum wage or for, clean energy, and at the same time also building toward a rupture with capitalism. Clearly, the issue is how we do fight for reform. So whether I think one of the dangers is to expect just that reforms are going to be passed on by elected representatives in institutions, and to rely too much on representation, on state institutions, and so on. While I do think that even from the viewpoint of getting reforms, I do think that actually the moments in which really important reforms have been passed in a number of countries historically is the moment in which there was activation from below, there was empowerment from below, there were really massive movements. So I do think that we can and we should fight for a number of reforms and organize around them today, but at the same time do it in such a way as to increase empowerment from below and democracy from below. So without, thinking that a party or elected representative will do it for us.
Cinzia, thanks so much for talking to us.
And thank you for having me.
For more of Cynthia Aruza and Tithi Bhattacharya and Nancy Fraser, the co-authors of Feminism for the 99%, on sale this week.
Tuesday.
Yeah, it's 96 pages. It's really worthwhile. And have a good women's strike Friday. So long.
Bye-bye.
To our loved ones and family. I wanted more than they, but what I've got here today is more than I bargained for. When I walk through that door, I bring home asbestosis and silicosis, brown, long, black, lung disease, and radiation hits.